and welcome to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have the Executive Director for Uplift Center for Grieving Children, Darcy Walker Krause, and welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start with that mission statement. Give me the elevator speech about the center.
Yes, absolutely. So our mission is that Uplift Center for Grieving Children helps children grieving a death to heal and grow through their grief while strengthening families, communities, and professionals' understanding of how best to respond to their needs. What that means for us is that we are providing free grief groups to kids and their families in the Philadelphia area who have lost a close loved one. So we have grief groups that in schools and communities, and we also offer crisis support around the city and training.
How many children do you serve in the course of a year?
So last year, directly in our groups, we served 1,200 children. This year, we are on track to serve even more than that, probably closer to 2,000 over the course of 2019 to 2020.
Do children grieve differently than adults?
They absolutely do. And oftentimes, children, the ways that they grieve may look different and may not even be recognizable as grief. For instance, an example would be a small child who's lost a loved one running around, acting hyper. And people think that, oh, they're just totally fine. That's part of how they're expressing their emotions. That's part of how they're expressing what they're feeling. And I also think that one of the things that's important to understand about children who've lost somebody is that it's a continuing loss. You know, as they grow into adulthood, that is a loss that will be continued to be processed in different iterations of that child's development. So as that child moves into the teen years, it's going to look different than it did at six, maybe, or in the 20s, as an adulthood. As we change as adults, it also becomes a continuing loss. So it's something that kids process differently, and it is a longer term thing for them.
What age range do you deal with there?
Yeah, so we serve kids anywhere from age 5 all the way up to 25. We have some young adults as well that we serve in some of our groups in the community.
Now, in Philadelphia, you said that we are going to see more numbers, that your numbers are increasing. Is that because of our violence in the city? Are those most of the children that you're seeing, children who are affected by an act of violence that's robbed them of a parent? And you also do siblings as well, right? It's close family members.
It's close loved ones, so whatever that means to the child. You know, the answer is that in part, we definitely have seen a spike from the violence, because when one person dies in a homicide, they leave maybe their children, their siblings, who could be younger than them, that they leave other family members and friends and neighbors, and it becomes this ripple effect, just one life, obviously. I think that, so the homicide absolutely has increased the services that we're responding to, both in our school-based programs and also in our post-crisis support. This fall, we saw a lot of teenagers and children die, actually, and so we were in schools responding to that after those occurred. But I also think that what we're dealing with in the city of Philadelphia is also the outcome of socioeconomic problems in the city, because obviously socioeconomic problems lead to poorer health outcomes, maybe less insurance, maybe less likelihood to get to the doctor in a certain amount of time, and other things that come alongside that, as well as just, accidents, illness. I mean, but we definitely in Philadelphia, with the socioeconomic issues and with the violence, we definitely see the response, kind of that those losses.
Are we getting into the ACE conversation here?
We can get into the ACE conversation.
Go for it. Let's talk about it, because everybody talks about it now. 2-3 years ago, I couldn't tell you what an ACE was. And now it comes up not just when the Salvation Army is sitting down, but when we're talking about Philabundance. These adverse childhood experiences, that's the buzz right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, so death of a loved one is actually not an ACE factor, which I always think is an interesting I think there's some questions around that as to why. And I will also say that the original ACEs factors have been completely things have been added on to them. They're actually Dr. Roy Wade of CHOP created the urban ACEs factors. And there's all sorts of different versions now that I think take more into account. But absolutely, I mean, the thing with ACEs is that when we work with families, and so oftentimes we have a child who comes in who's lost a close loved one. Oftentimes they're experiencing other challenges, so to say, but what we would likely refer to as ACE factors when they get older. And then we've got a parent or caregiver with those kids who most likely has also experienced various ACEs factors when they were children. And so you've got these compounding factors that are affecting these families, so that our services are helpful, but we also have to take all of that potential trauma into consideration as we serve that family. So it's looking at beyond just what we're seeing presented to us, but really trying to look at the family holistically and address their needs as a family.
Well, let's get the history of the center too, because look at this population. We're poorer and we're older, but we're poorer, and our homicide rate, it just is one of those consistent things. It's not as bad as it had been, which we keep forgetting, but it is still absolutely ludicrous. Yeah. So how did the center get founded? I know you're 20 years old.
Yes. So we began actually before we were actually a nonprofit. Our origins come out of the mid-90s as actually part of St. Christopher's Hospital for Children's Bereavement Program. So our co-founders came out of that. And when St. Christopher's went bankrupt in 1999, they decided that they said, we're going to form a nonprofit. So literally on the eve of 2000, they started this nonprofit to provide free grief support to kids. And so for a long time, we were up in North Philly right near either on campus or near St. Christopher's Hospital. And then in 2012, we moved to our current office location in East Falls. But we are all over the city with our groups. We have 6 locations where we're offering our family support groups. So they're really – we try to make it accessible for families.
So if it started in the hospital, I'm going to guess then it was dealing with siblings who had brothers, sisters at the hospital. And it was really more sibling relationships that they were addressing there. Does it make a difference when it is a death by illness, or it's a death by violence of some kind, or again, a traumatic quick loss like an automobile accident?
So there are sort of two answers there. I mean, when it comes to making a difference to whether the kids should be in a grief group together, I would say for the most part, it doesn't matter the kind of loss, because at the end of the day, what you're grieving is the loss of this person in your life, not necessarily how they died. That being said, we do have to be very attuned to trauma. And the thing about with grief is that traumatic grief can either be subjective or objective. So it really could be something where someone died in an objectively traumatic way, where gunshot and you saw it or heard it, or that's objectively traumatic. But there's also subjective trauma, which is, maybe a child watches a loved one die in hospice and finds that really deeply troubling. So it's really about how the child responds. And what I will say is that if there's really, really severe trauma, we always would refer that child to individual support before group support, because trauma has to be dealt with before grief. There are some children, though, who maybe are ready for group, but then also want to have some of that additional individual support as well to process what they're going through.
I was about to ask you, can you prepare a child for loss? Are you ever called in beforehand?
Absolutely. We absolutely are called. Usually what we do, we don't go into the child, because that's not the best thing is for the loved one who's with them to really support them. And we walk, I've walked people through, memorial things that they want to do to have, there was a woman who called me one day. She was on her way to Build-A-Bear, and she was getting a Build-A-Bear for her friend who was dying, and because she wanted her friend to be able to record her voice into the Build-A-Bear. And I said, that is a wonderful idea. And then I gave her some other ideas about ways to just kind of to create some sort of like a legacy for that mother and her child. So we absolutely get calls from folks all the time looking for that kind of support.
How do children get referred to you?
So we get calls from schools, from churches, and places of worship. We doctors, the pediatricians' offices. It's really a pretty wide variety. But I would say that I think over the last few years, schools are a big referral source, just because obviously the counselors find out about something and then give our information to the family.
Well, then let's go backwards then, because we keep alluding to how many locations you have.
Yes.
So could you give us where where you're actually providing your services. I know you're in schools and you have your own centers. So talk about those, and then we'll delve into what the approach actually is.
Absolutely. So let me give you the different programs that we have. So we have programs in four different buckets, so to speak. So the first are our family service groups, and that's kind of what I've been talking a little bit more to thus far. And those groups are children come and they meet in the developmentally appropriate group, so younger elementary, older elementary, middle school, and high school. At the same time that those children are meeting, their caregivers or parents have a group concurrently so they can get support, so they can figure out ways to help their grieving child. Those groups meet every other week in kind of a week A and week B format. So younger elementary and middle school 1 week, older elementary and high school the following week, and so on. And we have six different locations for those groups. We have our offices in East Falls. We're at West Philadelphia at the CHOP Carabot Center. We are in South Philadelphia at the CHOP Primary Care Center. And we are in Northeast Philadelphia at Calvary Christian Church. We are also, two of our newer locations are actually at North Philadelphia at the Linfest Center, but now Healing 10. And we're also in Center City at Holy Trinity and a church on Rittenhouse Square. So we have all of those groups so that families can access all across the city, and we try to make them as accessible as possible. I'll say with our family services groups, one thing is that we've done some research and looked at the impact, and what we've definitely found over the years is that there's an increase in the relational attachment to peers and to their caregivers and loved ones. So that's a really positive outcome for us, and we're continuing to look at that. The second bucket, so to speak, is our community and school groups. So the in-school groups meet in schools during the school day. The counselors put the groups together with permission from the families. That is actually our larger program that we have. We're going to be at over 150 schools this year, but we will provide over 200 in school and community grief groups. So some schools are K through 8, and obviously we have to divide those up into a couple of groups. That's where the difference in the numbers. And in our in-school groups, it's shorter term, and it's really focused on coping. And we look to see an increase in coping from before the group to after. And I will tell you, last year we saw a 54% increase in that. In the kids' coping ability. So that program is really important and impactful out in the community. And then also we have some community-based groups. So those groups, we're out in different locations such as the Juvenile Justice Services Center, the Net Evening Reporting Room. We do groups at the Attic. So we have a lot of different areas that we try to get to. And if there's a partner organization that wants to partner with us, we're happy to bring our work there. With all of our community and school groups, there are nuances among the curricula. Sometimes we have some homicide-specific groups. We actually work with the medical examiner's office right now, and we have an overdose-specific curriculum for kids. We're working with at the Attic. We have a kind of an ambiguous loss group for the LGBTQIA plus youth that are a part of that group. So we really try to tailor what we do with each group. And then the final two buckets, the third is our crisis support. So that's where a student or a teacher has died, and we go into a school and we provide support to the staff, to the students. We help come up with a plan with the school. And then after that, after kind of that initial time where everyone kind of descends upon the schools, it gets quiet and they don't have as much support. And that's actually where we go and we provide crisis support groups, sort of like memorial groups for the kids who are close with the person who died, just to support them as they go forward. And then finally, we do trainings and professional development. So we train in a lot of schools, a lot of teachers. And so we're just trying to help. We can't get to every kid. And so we're trying to help professionals be better equipped to support grieving children and traumatized youth. So we do trainings of all different kinds that we can tailor for whatever group that we're working with.
Some of those peers that you talk to, is it from the EMT that's doing an intake, or is it a hospital? Are they guidance counselors, et cetera? Who should be taking your training?
I mean, honestly, I would argue anyone, because I think we're all going to encounter, you know, kids who need support. And you know, we get the most calls from schools because teachers, you know, statistically, there was actually a study a few years back by the New York Life Foundation that actually that looked at teachers, and basically the statistic is that like every year a teacher will have at least one grieving child in her in his or her classroom, and they will most likely have not had any grief training whatsoever from their programs in school. And so teachers are a really prime crowd to help for us to educate. But we are also, you know, obviously out in different community organizations, social workers. They're really across the board.
Mm-hmm. If you are just joining us, this is Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we're talking to Darcy Walker Kraus. She is the executive director for the Uplift Center for Grieving Children. And if you'd like more information, go to upliftphilly.org. Real easy, upliftphilly.org. They have a phone number, 267-437-3123, but you'll get that information, of course, when you go to upliftphilly.org. You threw some numbers at me, which we haven't alluded to, but that 1 in 5 kids in Philadelphia will lose a parent or sibling by the time they reach their 25th birthday. And you could fill all of our major sports arenas and still need 60,000 additional seats for each grieving child to have a spot. Yes. Is this unusual? Is Philadelphia, or is this really reflective of life in general across the states?
I will say the numbers are surprising when you look around the United States. I believe the national statistic is 1 in 13 kids will lose a loved one by the time they reach 18. And then it oftentimes doubles by the time you hit 25. But absolutely, that it is like we're on the higher end. We're definitely, you know, and particularly in Philadelphia, we are, you know, even higher up, I think, given some of the difficulties and challenges that we face in the city.
Mm. Now, is this a newer science? Because I know when I was a kid, we never heard about any kind of a counseling, you know, an offer when a child, when a student, a fellow mm-hmm. student lost. Oh, we all knew someone who their mom had passed or their father was gone. And we just, nobody talked about therapy or group or coping skills. And is that the ultimate goal here, the ability to cope, or are you looking for acceptance when you sit down with a child? What's the roadmap?
Yeah, so I guess it is a newer science, I guess you could, so to speak, is that in the early to mid-90s is when this became something that started actually out of on the West Coast, out of the Dougie Center model, actually is one of the first ones in early 1990s. And created but a lot of groups based off of. Because when in the midnight, my mom died in 1995, and this did not exist in my hometown. So this is not something, you know, this is not something that really was around previously. But now it is more prevalent, and I think it's more understood. And what we're looking at, we're looking to support kids in whatever their needs are. So sometimes this is coping, but sometimes it's really just helping them keep that connection to the person who died. We talk about continuing bonds being important. So continuing that relationship. So let's say, you know, like you always did something special for the, you know, for Thanksgiving. So helping kind of talk about what the holidays are going to be like now that person's gone, ways to keep them incorporated, keep like their memory incorporated in your life, but then also accepting kind of how life is now and coping with that. So it's kind of a mix of that. Coping, I think, is a good catch-all phrase, because I think that when we look towards the longevity of a child's life, that they're going to have to be able to cope with that. But I think that it takes various therapeutic things that are within that one big umbrella word.
It used to be that you talked about faith and God, and you assumed mm-hmm. that there would be a religious body that would be taking care of these issues. And for a lot of kids today, that's not there. It's family, it's school. Does that change the conversation? Because you are actually located in a couple of religious campuses.
Yeah. And actually, I will say around the Philadelphia region, like there are some churches and places of worship that have grief support programs, particularly for adults, and not as much usually for children. But they're, you know, I think that places of worship do try to meet that need of their congregations. But it is, you know, but obviously some folks are not affiliated with, maybe with different like organizations, or maybe they don't have a religion that they adhere to. So a lot of times it is looking at it from more of a secular scope, I guess you could say, you know, that we're just trying to like look at this from a therapeutic perspective, mm-hmm. And to try to give some that support there. But yeah, it's something that I think has changed over the years too, as well.
I can remember. Well, he's in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's in a.
All the euphemisms.
All the euphemisms that they would throw around. And like, well, yeah, well, it left me.
We've had children, actually. We always are very – I am always making this comment to people, especially when I learn of a child who's lost – maybe if the kid's maybe like 6 or younger – to not speak in euphemisms, because we've literally heard children say, if he's in a better place, I want to go to how can I get there? So you have to remember, kids, if you speak in a euphemism like that, they don't understand that you're speaking, and they literally think that like that means like they're with the angels. Okay, I want to go with angels. I mean, we always say speak very concretely with children so that they understand this person is dead. And kids don't even understand the finality of death until they're around 7, 6, 7, 8.
Gone to sleep.
Yeah, well, and they'll think that even if they say, yeah, my daddy's dead, but he'll be back tomorrow. I mean, literally, they can't understand that it's a final thing until a certain age. That's just a developmental fact.
Well, then how do you work through grief with a child? How do you start the process?
So it varies. It would be the answer.
Terrible question. I just threw it out there. I'm going to let you dance around it for a few minutes. And then.
You know, I think that, you know, whenever – so I oftentimes, because of my job, I feel like I'm the grief lady friend for everybody. So I get the Facebook messages or like the phone calls or the texts like, hey, this happened to a friend of mine. What do I do? You know, I think oftentimes like the main things that I always say to people when this happens is, you know – talk to the child, be honest, keep honest lines of communication open. Those are some just basic facts that we know. We know that being honest with the child about the cause of the death, and we know that will be a better thing for the child long term, creates trust. Telling the caregiver or parent to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, because oftentimes I think that It's a lot to take on, and you know, just to make sure that they're getting support for themselves, because that will let them give the support their child needs. Oftentimes, I'll recommend when friends call. This is the example I'm thinking of. Obviously, this also work at our workplace. We do the same thing, but I think we oftentimes get the call 3 months later. So I'm thinking of the calls I get where they're right afterwards, and you know, we have a book list that we actually. We'll send out if anyone ever needs that. It's on our website, upliftphilly.org. So you can actually access that information. We have the book list that you can look at. And it actually is broken up into ages, because obviously what a 6-year-old needs to read is different than what a 15-year-old should read, obviously. But that's a great, great way to have a conversation right afterwards with the child, because it gives you something that you're reading together and that you can talk about afterwards, and it begins some of those conversations. And that's part of what the grief process is those conversations and processing out those emotions that you're feeling inside. I obviously, as executive director of a grief organization, am a strong believer that if you would like additional support, you should absolutely get it. We are a very cost-efficient way to do that because we're free. So you could come to us, and we have free groups. And one thing that's important about that, though, is that if you have, let's say you are lucky and have some awesome insurance where you can go and get individual support, because we're free, you can do both. So you don't, it's not like you have to use your insurance for us and they can't get other support. And we can also make those kind of referrals to help get support and talk to other professionals too. So, and one thing I'll finally say is that if you ever have a question, we answer our phones, we will give thoughts and advice and professional, you know, advice to you around things you can do, even if you don't want to go to a grief center, but you're just looking for some advice. That's something that our professionals and clinicians do on a daily basis as well.
We've been talking about personal connections here, a mom, a sibling, a dad. What happens when you have something like the recent death of Kobe Bryant? Does that rip open wounds, or does that affect them the same way?
It absolutely triggers people maybe who have lost someone recently. You know, in that situation, obviously, Kobe and his daughter died. So maybe a child who's lost a dad. But also, there is the reality of just feeling that connection to a public figure like Kobe Bryant, looking up to him, and losing someone, and even if it's someone we've never met or would have never met, it still is someone that we see and that we can feel loss and we can feel sadness around that. That's completely normal. And we've seen that actually with some of the kids that we work with at Uplift.
After something like this, after a national accident or a tragedy, should you consider looking for help even in that case?
You absolutely could. It really is. It's individual to individual. One thing I would recommend, too, is that there are some great articles. I know that we've actually put some up on our Facebook account, which is @Uplift Center. We've had some articles around that as well. Just to read those articles, realizing you're not alone and what you're feeling is normal, and just giving yourself that grace of knowing it's normal and it's okay and you can be sad.
We are running out of time, and I want to ask you about one, fundraising and your volunteer efforts. But first, you just said someone will call, might be 3 months later. Do kids go through phases of grief as well? Is it ever too late to pick up that phone? And what happens if you don't get that counseling or that help to process this?
It's never too late to call. It's never too early to call, frankly. It's really what the child and the family need. And listen, you know, obviously there are some folks who just will not seek resources. As long as the child can still process the grief in some way, that will be good. But the one thing, I think the things you have to watch out for is that unprocessed grief can result in some depressive and anxiety symptoms. It could all, in older years, also can affect school. So really making sure that there is processing taking place, that is important, because it really can kind of sneak up on you in later years. And so it's really important to make sure that you really process everything that you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Now I mentioned volunteers, yes, and I mentioned fundraising efforts, and you have resources. So go for it.
Okay. So we have two major fundraising events that we do each year. We have our golf outing, which will be on June 1st, 2020. If you're interested in signing up, give us a call. We also have our fall gala called An Uplifting Evening, and that is on November 12th, 2020. So that will be a big fun night at V in Center City. So please, you know, if you're interested, you can give us a call. We can help get you signed up. And then when it comes to volunteer opportunities, we have a lot of opportunities. We have volunteers in some of our family services groups, so that's a really direct way to get involved. But we also utilize volunteers for our fundraising events and for some of our development opportunities in the office as well.
So if you can do it.
Yeah, and yeah, absolutely. And if you don't have time, can't come to one of our events, you can always visit upaffiliate.org and you can make a donation there that will help support our services that we provide in Philadelphia.
And is that Philadelphia, or are you in the greater Philadelphia?
We are in the greater Philadelphia area. We are in Philadelphia County predominantly, but also we're in Lower Bucks, Montgomery County. We're over actually in Camden County. We provide some grief groups and schools over there. So we're pretty much around mostly. We go where we're asked to come in too. So,
and of course, on your website you have resources that anybody can access.
Yes, we have tip sheets that offer a lot of great information that you can access anytime you want, and they can help you, like, you know, around the holidays or like talking to a child who's lost somebody, just different things like that that give some tips to folks.
Parting words?
Please, you know, consider visiting our website. Make sure, like, if you want to learn anything more, please give us a call, and please support our work. Visit us at upliftphilly.org. Make a donation, volunteer, reach out, and let us help you out in any way we can.
And again, it's never too late to pick up the phone and call you.
No, it's not. Absolutely.
And of course, the phone number is 267-437-3123. But you'll find that when you go to upliftphilly.org. All one word, upliftphilly.org. And that's where you will find information about, well, the golf outing, the November 12th gala, volunteer opportunities. And if we call and we want you to come out and talk to our school, you will do that?
Absolutely.
Our community group?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. I would love to do that.
Yeah. And if you're a peer hearing this, if you would like to learn more about the professional training offered, that's the place for you to go as well. UpliftPhilly.org. And the executive director of Uplift Center for Grieving Children, Darcy Walker Krause, has been my guest today. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Look forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.